hands at a pond and been reluctant to let go. I was sure it was tangled up in something from her past. All of those things that none of us talked about. The secrets that we stuffed down deep in a dark, broken part of us. Maybe it was something that even she didn't understand. It might be something as simple as the memory of her mother's cheek touching her own. It's soft, she admitted, still noncommittal. But that collar. The violet one might fit you. We could trade. She grabbed the pink dress from me, already knowing all the reasons why she needed to wear it. Why she needed to smile and pretend we were there for no other reason than what everyone believed, that we were honored guests of the Ballingers. But I'm still wearing my Zeith, she said.
Chapter 27. Jace.
The ambassador's belly pressed over the low table like a rising loaf of bread, and his buckles, belts, and jeweled chains rattled against it every time he coughed or pulled in a deep, wheezing breath. He inhaled another long pull from his water pipe. The sickeningly sweet tobacco smoke hung in the stale air. The apartments at the arena that the Ballingers provided, for a price, had been remade in the Kandoran style. Heavy tapestries darkened the walls, and fur rugs covered the floors. The shutters were pulled tight, and the only light came from a bronze oil lamp glowing on the table between us. The flickering flame cast shadows on his bodyguards standing behind him, enormous men with shimmering sabers hanging at their sides. It was all for effect. Arstraza stood behind us for the same reason. The ambassador's upper lip twisted in discontent.
You are not your father's son. He would have met with me last week. He knew.
I'm here now, I said. State your business. I have other meetings besides yours. I had no more meetings, and my harsh reply was part of the game. I had warned Gunner to keep his mouth shut before we entered the room. He didn't like long silences, like the one we were having now. I grinned, cool and calm, and leaned back in my chair. But inside, I was as tense as Gunner and Titus. The ambassador stared at me, rolling his pink, puffy lips back and forth, the corners of his mouth glistening with saliva. I stared back.
There are other places to trade, he said.
But not as profitable as here. You make a killing at this arena, and we both know it. We process the orders, you know.
Profit is only good when there's no loss. Your father made promises about protection, and yet we still have none. We have ears and eyes. We know what's been going on. Our caravans will be the next to be hit. There's the trading center at Shiramar and the one at Rajnivad. We could take our business there. Rents and cuts are smaller, and the routes less dangerous.
He took a long, easy drag on his pipe.
And if we pull out, others will follow.
Gunner's fingers coiled into a fist. I nudged him with my boot beneath the table. My father's promises are good, I said. The weapons we're developing...
Developing? He spit out, his lip lifted in disgust. What does that mean?
It means that your goods will be protected from door to door. That's all you need to know.
That's a grandiose claim for someone...
Grandiose, I answered with the same level of disgust he had just thrown at me. What does that mean? An idea too big for your small Kandoran head? His wiry brows twitched, and a grin lit his beady black eyes.
Your father always sweetened the pot for us when we had to wait for something.
I paused, even though I already knew what I would give him. If I gave in too easily, he would balk and argue for more, and I wanted to get out of here as soon as I could with what we needed. And what we needed were the Kandorans. They were our largest trader, and they had legitimate complaints. We had patrols on the major routes to conduct raids on those who came under the guise of trading at the arena. But then, just short of it, only sent a lead man in to make contacts and lure buyers away to where their caravans waited, offering them better deals and avoiding our cuts. No one used us as a storefront without paying the lease. The same patrols who guarded our interests offered a degree of safety to our legitimate traders, too, but we didn't have enough manpower to escort every caravan once they left our territory. And that's where the other caravans had been hit. 100 miles out. Even with their own security, drivers died and goods were lost. If there were even rumblings of them pulling out because of raids, it would hurt our business. That's what other leagues counted on. But it was about to change. Soon, just one of our hands could single-handedly guard a whole caravan. Protection was what the Ballingers had always been good at. Now, we would be able to extend it beyond our borders.
Nothing?
The ambassador pushed, revealing his eagerness to still work with us. Our location was ultimately more central and far more comfortable. We made sure of that. Shiramar was a hot, dirty pit, and Rajnavad out of the way. Not to mention we looked the other way on the ambassador's little side trades that his king knew nothing about. As long as we got our cut on those, too. A free lease on these apartments until we deliver on our promise. That's sweet enough for you? The ambassador nodded, his stubby fingers happily tapping his chest.
I was wrong. You are your father's son.
I stood. Gunnar and Titus rose beside me. The Ballingers keep their word, I said. Now don't bother me with any more of your demands. He huffed to his feet, a greasy smile wrinkling his face.
Patre, always good to do business with you.
Once we were out of the apartment, Titus whispered,
Free lease is going to cost us a fortune. And if the other tenants get a whiff of the deal we gave him,
it will only cost us a fortune if we don't deliver on our promise. From the arena, we went straight to see Beaufort, prepared to pressure him. For us to deliver on our promise, he and his cohorts had to deliver too, and we were tired of waiting. His promises had worn thin. But as soon as we came through the gates, he greeted us as if he anticipated our visit and ushered us over to the testing range, saying they had worked out a major stumbling block.
It was all a problem of translation, he said, then gave us a demonstration of the arms they had promised.
It was half the scale of the final firepower, but still impressive. It looked like it was everything we had hoped for, and more.
Another couple of weeks, a month at the most, to refine, he promised. But we do need more supplies.
Gunnar and Titus gawked at the destroyed target that was more than 100 yards away, then erupted in hoots.
Just tell us what you need, Gunnar said. We'll have Zane get it to you right away.
And the fever cure? I asked. Beaufort's brows pinched together and he shook his head.
That's a bit harder to rush along. Phineas is testing it. Don't worry, every day brings him closer.
Closer. I had been giving my mother that same update for months. It was a thread of hope that seemed to appease her, and for the time being, it appeased me too. The weapons we needed now, and I'd just seen evidence of that success. Back in my room, I bathed, washing away the heavy stench of the ambassador's apartment. I felt hopeful as I dressed, thinking about the weapons. There had been no more fires last night, and today, no evidence of more labor hunters. Things appeared to be returning to normal. I hoped the ambassador was wrong about caravan attacks, but if there were any, our patrols were instructed to come down hard, hunt down the attackers no matter what it took, and find out who was ordering the hits. Gunner whistled low.
Now that's a sight you don't see every day.
Ren, Kazi, and Sanove emerged from the arbor, shoulder to shoulder. I stared at Kazi. She hadn't spotted me yet. Her black hair was braided in an elegant crown around her head, no doubt a creation of Jelaine's. A dusting of fallen yellow petals from the arbor clung to her hair, and her violet dress floated in light waves past her ankles. Her shoulders were nearly bare except for the smallest wisp of sleeve draped over them. Her eyes skimmed another part of the garden, searching for something, and I couldn't help but wonder, or maybe hope, that she searched for me. Titus elbowed me.
Close your mouth, Patre. You look too eager.
I was eager.
What's going on with the one in pink? Gunnar asked.
That's Ren,
Aram and Samuel said simultaneously. Ren was transformed too, barely looking like the cutthroat we had seen in the alley earlier today, except for the curved sword at her side.
No one told her she could leave it at home, Gunnar said.
My attention went back to Cassie. Disconnected words flooded my head, and I heard my father's long-ago warning.
Choose your words carefully, even the words you think, because they become seeds, and seeds become history.
There were words I had avoided even thinking ever since I met Cassie. When my mother asked about her, I only said she was resourceful, a safe, stable word. But now others flowed freely, sown recklessly in my head. I wanted them all to take root, grow, become history, part of my history.
Clever, smart, ruthless, determined, brave, devious, loyal, caring.
She turned, her eyes grazing the tops of heads, the breeze lifting loose strands of hair at her neck, and another word came.
Beautiful.
And it was the only word I could think of, until another one bloomed on its heels. Future. And I wondered if it was too dangerous a word to entertain. But I already felt it taking root. More guests arrived, sweeping Cassie and her friends from our view, and Aram and Samuel took off in Ren's direction. Mason was right. They were a little too preoccupied with someone who could likely break both of their necks in unison while smiling. I'd have to talk to them. Last night had been the small family dinner, but tonight all the family was invited to celebrate the new Patre, along with close friends and colleagues. The priestess, seer, and healer who attended my father would be here too. Beaufort had broached the idea of coming too, hanging back in the shadows, but I said no. He was getting itchy from so many years of hiding, and maybe a little cocky too, having eluded the kingdoms for so long. But he wasn't going to get caught on my watch, at least not while he still had goods to deliver. We had too much invested at this point. He had joined us for dinners in the past, but there would be too many here tonight outside of the family, especially Cassie and her crew. He said his appearance had changed and he wasn't likely to be recognized, but it was too much of a risk. He was still wanted by the kingdoms. We had seen the occasional warrant brought into the arena by traitors and had mostly become numb to them. They named people we were unlikely to ever see, but Beaufort had been different. He had come to us with the wanted bill in hand, not trying to hide who he was. He was tired of running. He said the reason he was really wanted was because he had escaped with valuable information and he would prefer to share it with us than with people he didn't trust. According to him, he'd been an officer in the war between the Greater Kingdoms, and there was bad blood between him and the Morrigese king. Beaufort claimed the king was corrupt, and in turn, the king charged him with treason for switching sides. After the war, the kingdoms had signed new treaties, so now he was wanted by all of them. We had doubted that this was entirely true, but neither did we care about the political collusions and grudges of distant kingdoms, except as they affected Tor's watch. Still, my father had sent a discreet message to the king's magistrate in Parsis regarding a warrant floating through the arena to check out Beaufort's story. The magistrate had no details to offer on Beaufort and could neither confirm nor refute the charges.
It could be that we're actually doing the kingdoms a favor, keeping him out of further trouble, my father had said, but it was mostly the promise of the fever cure that made us look the other way.
And of course, the weapons were simply a benefit that made our arrangement all the sweeter. Whatever it took to keep the family, and that included everyone in Hell's Mouth, safe, was all that mattered.
Patre.
I turned toward the graveled voice. It was the seer. She was suddenly at my side, her azure eyes looking up into mine, a crooked smile twisting her lips. Her hood was pushed back, which was rare, but her wild black hair still circled her face, casting her features in shadow. She kissed my hand and paused, looking at the ring, then shook her head sadly and crooned,
"They found you, Patre. I am sorry."
For the first time, it occurred to me that maybe her warning that they were coming for me had been about the labor hunters and not the leagues. "What news have you?" I asked.
"I taste new blood. They circle near."
"It's been taken care of. We killed those who came after me." Her eyes glowed with worry.
"Not them,"
she whispered.
"Others. Guard your heart, Patre. I see a knife hovering, ready to cut it out."
I smiled. "Don't worry, I'll keep my Straza near. Go, enjoy some food and drink. My mother has a seat of honor for you. Titus will show you." I grabbed Titus by the back of his shirt, pulling him away from another conversation, telling him to get the seer a drink and help her to her seat. I wondered sometimes if her warnings were prompted by my mother's concerns. They spoke each day at the temple, and my mother generously contributed to her keep. There were few in Hell's Mouth who had the gift. The Venden Queen was rumored to be strong in it, and I wondered about Cassie and the way she slipped away so quietly, almost like magic. Our Ballinger histories mentioned the gift, but it seemed to have faded with the generations. Titus left with the seer, and I strained to see through the crowd. I spotted Garvin. He stood alone, staring. I followed the line of his gaze, and it led to Cassie. "Bright Mist. It's one of the poorest quarters. Don't let the name fool you. Nothing bright about it." Garvin was wrong. There was at least one bright thing about it.
Chapter 28. Cassie.
We were out of place here. Frauds in every way, playing roles, wearing fine dresses as if it was something we had done hundreds of times when we never had. Not even once. Ren kept hitching her shoulder up like the whole thing was going to fall off of her, saying its flimsy construction made no sense at all, while her fingers absently made small circles on her abdomen, feeling the pink softness over and over again. Sonove held a goblet out, trying to catch her own reflection, watching the yellow fabric dance in the crystal before her eyes. Then she would smooth her hands over her silky curves, pressing the dress there like it might vanish. I was no different. I had always thought my vest an extravagance, but it served a purpose. Its hidden pockets held weapons and maps. The sturdy leather protected me from the weather. The dress I wore now served no purpose at all except to feel beautiful. It didn't belong on me. I had never felt beautiful in my life. I was only the dirty street rat no one wanted to see coming. And then there was the food.
"Do you smell that?" Sinove whispered.
It was impossible not to smell. The scent of marinated, roasting meats was a glorious, complex tapestry hanging over our heads, swelling our cheeks and awakening our stomachs like a song. Tables overflowed with first courses of cheese, savory breads, and an abundance of food that filled us with both wonder and guilt. There were still shortages in Venda, which was what made the settlement so vital. It felt traitorous to nibble on one tiny delicacy after another. But we played our roles. We ate, We smiled. We improvised. We were rattan, and we could chisel what made us uncomfortable and awkward into an ice sculpture in hell if we had to. I searched for Jace. I couldn't see him, but I knew he was probably occupied with other guests. There were so many. I guessed about 200. Lydia and Nash ran between tables and shrubs with their young cousins, laughing and playing tag. Surely, if the captain was here, he'd be among the guests, perhaps going by a different name to hide his identity. Maybe the Ballingers didn't even know they had a wanted criminal in their midst. Was that possible? It was a hope that suddenly sprang in me. And then, against my will, my eyes searched again for the pale, bloodless face. But I came to another one instead, the man who had followed me today. I alerted Ren and Sinove. He obviously wasn't tailing me anymore, so why was he so intently keeping an eye on me? "He's still watching," Ren whispered to me a few minutes later. "He knows who I am," I said. "If he knew, he wouldn't still be watching," Sinove answered. "He's still trying to figure it out. Even if he makes the connection, you can deny it. You don't look anything like that girl anymore." "But her name," Ren replied. "No Pravizi driver ever knew the name of a street rat." "Not Kazi. Her other name. Ten. Everyone knew that one." "She simply denies the name too." The name that would make doors close for me. No one let their guard down around an accomplished thief. I turned and looked directly at him and smiled as if surprised. He nodded and walked away. "Taste this," Sinove said, already forgetting the driver, shoving a small crisp of bread slathered with a thick, tangy relish into my hand. She rolled her eyes like she was tasting a fruit of the gods. I groaned with pleasure. Ren licked every crumb from her fingers. Sinove grinned and put her hands on her hips. "Look at us, being fed and clothed like royalty." Ren smacked her lips. "Enjoy it while you can." We all knew this was a short-lived indulgence. "Oh, trust me," Sinove answered. "I am. But not as much as Kazi is enjoying it." Her eyes narrowed, and I knew what she was implying. I waited for a lecture, but instead I saw unexpected worry. "I like him too," she said, "but you know that can't last either. Not one swee." Her brows lifted, and she left the last thought hanging for me to complete. "Not once we steal away his secret guest? Not once he finds out why I'm really here?" "I'm not expecting anything to last," I replied with disdain. "I'm only doing my job the best I can." "Admirable," Ren answered and exchanged a dubious glance with Sinove. The thing that still puzzled me was, why? What did a traitorous, on-the-run captain who had no army to command have to offer the Ballingers? He had barely escaped a battlefield with the clothes on his back. He had never gotten his promised fortune from the Komazar, and yet he had something, something worth their risks, if he was here. But the Queen was certain her informant was reliable, or she wouldn't have sent us. As we nibbled more food, I told them about the layout of the compound, pointing only with eyes to the various buildings. Beyond Grey Castle and Riverbend are the stables and outbuildings. Dark Cottage is empty, so he's not staying there. Music started up, and a group of women began dancing, Verlin among them. Ren grimaced. "How's your foot?" "Throbbing," I answered. "The birch wings is beginning to wear off. You two will have to do twice the dancing to cover for me. The Ballingers are insulted easily, and if none of us dance... Ren's brows pulled down in a disturbed V.
I don't know a thing about dancing.
Sure you do, Ren, Sinove said, nudging her with her elbow. We used to dance to the flutes in the Jahendra on market days.
That was twirling, falling on our backsides, and laughing.
Sinove shrugged. It's all about the same. Add a little swaying. Just watch what everyone else does. Damn, with that dress on, no one will be watching where your feet go anyway. Lydia came running our way, her eyes wild as she squealed, Hide me! Hide me, quick! Ren's hand immediately shot to her zeith. I reached out and stopped her. It's a game, Ren, I said quietly. Only a game. But my heart beat a wicked dash, too. Hide me, please, hide me. The screams were as vivid now as the day I had heard them. The tearful pleas as crowds ran from Blackstone Square, beating on doors, trying to hide in dark corners when the slaughter began. Hide me. It was no game. We were only 11 years old. I hid three people in my hovel. There was no door to lock. The only weapon I had was the same small stick my mother hadn't been able to reach in time, useless against the guards' swords and long halberds. No one came inside, but we heard the pounding of footsteps as guards hunted people down. We heard the screams. The clans had made the mistake of cheering for the princess after she stabbed the Komizar. The princess attacked him because he had killed a child, Aster, a girl who worked as a barrow runner in Sanctum Hall. Unfortunately, he didn't die from his wound, and he sought immediate revenge on the clans for their disloyalty.
Quick! Lydia pleaded again.
I shoved her behind us, and then Ren, Sinove, and I moved shoulder to shoulder, creating an armored wall of silk and satin. Lydia giggled behind us as Nash came running up, asking if we had seen her.
Seen who?
Ren asked, her breath still rushed.
We haven't seen anyone,
Sinove confirmed. Lydia squealed and tore out between us, racing past Nash. He chased after her, and we all stared, still shoulder to shoulder, watching them run away.
Only a game,
Sinove repeated and swallowed. She had been one of those who had hidden in my hovel. Tor's watch was a different world from our own. The games were different. We were talking about dancing, I said, trying to refocus our thoughts.
Right,
Sinove answered. Her chest swelled against the yellow silk in a deep, cleansing breath. She rose on her toes, and her eyes skimmed the far reaches of the gardens.
I'm already on it. If I can just find one very tall, dark, and...
She walked away, but there was little doubt who she was on the hunt for. Eben had been temporarily displaced by Mason. I looked to my right and saw Jace's twin brothers walking toward us, their gazes focused on Ren. I elbowed her. Aram and Samuel approaching, I whispered. Jace's younger brothers. I think they have a thing for you. Be nice.
What makes you think I don't know how to be nice?
She grumbled. She hitched up her shoulder, smoothing her scalloped pink sleeve into place, then twisted her scowl into a smile.
There. Now, which is which?
She whispered. That's for you to figure out. But don't leave permanent marks.
You're no fun at all,
she said, and walked off to meet them. It was my opportunity to slip into Ray House, the only house I hadn't yet searched. The offices were closed now, and Priya would be at the party. The front door was in shadows and, as it turned out, unlocked, and tonight, because of the party, there were no dogs roaming, only a few guards patrolling who were easy to slip past. The dim glow from the party lanterns filtered through the windows, giving me enough light to maneuver. The offices were sparsely furnished, most of the rooms on the first floor looking like sitting rooms, perhaps for business discussions, and though there were three floors of rooms, the majority filled with storage, there appeared to be only one office, Priya's. This explained the quiet and solitude that Jelaine had talked about. Priya's office took up most of the second floor and was the opposite of the rest of the house. What she lacked in companionship here, she made up for in decor. It was neat and excessively ordered, but overflowed with color and detail, as if the sum of her 23 years was laid out in this room. Whenever I had broken into a quarter lord's or merchant's home, I always took a few minutes to study their belongings. What they filled their houses with was revealing. Spiked strips beneath windows, caged rats with chopped-off tails, silky underclothing in bright colors, and always knives under their pillows. They trusted no one. In Priya's office there were, of course, ledgers and books, quills and ink, maps and stacks of paper waiting her attention. But the collection of small, polished pebbles laid out in a neat row across the top of her desk caught the light and my notice. Just below them was a tiny spotted quail feather laying precisely in the middle of her blotter. To the side were small charcoal sketches of butterflies, which revealed a softer side she didn't readily radiate. On the other side of her desk, a note caught my eye. For Jace's approval, supply request from B.I. B.I.? The Ballinger Inn? I surveyed the list. Morrigy's wine, Gitos olives, Gastineau fish eggs, Cruvas tobacco, large quantities of charcoal, and several powders that I'd never heard of before. Herbs? At the bottom of the page was Jace's signature. Priya's list had been approved. It was the only approval request I saw on her desk, but it was a costly one. Maybe that was why it required Jace's approval. I heard a door click, and then a light glowed in the downstairs hallway. By the time Priya stepped into her office, I had already stepped out and found my way down a back staircase. Maybe she had remembered another supply request that couldn't wait until morning, or maybe she simply needed a break from the party and a dose of her solitude again. She would find that here. The captain wasn't a guest in Ray House either. When I rejoined the party, I finally caught a glimpse of Jace. He was on the far side of the garden near Dark Cottage, immersed in a conversation with two older men. His black shirt made his blonde hair brighter, and his cheekbones still bore the warm polish of our long trek in the sun. I watched him as I walked closer, and noted what I had seen already today, the way he commanded attention. It wasn't just because he carried the title of Patre. There was a presence about him, an intensity that was both sobering and alluring. He was tall and his shoulders wide, but it wasn't his stature that stopped people. It was more about the angle of his head when he looked at you, the lift of his chin, the awareness in his eyes, the way you could see thoughts spinning behind them like a tailor measuring before he cut the cloth. There was precision in his stare, and that precision could slice right through you like diamond shears.
"I don't need an outsider, much less a Venden, to tell me the right thing to do."
His head turned as if he sensed someone watching him. From far across the garden, his eyes met mine. He didn't smile. He offered no expression at all. But his gaze lingered, and then he said a few quick words and left the man at his side, making his way toward me. A flutter skipped through my ribs. I was still uncertain about our parting today. He had left abruptly, and the kiss I had meant to control had felt like anything but a show. "Jace," I said when he stopped in front of me. He stared at me, his jaw tight, a vein raised at his temple, and then he reached out and grabbed my hand.
"We need to talk. Alone."
He pulled me along, his pace feverish, and I felt the increased pressure on my ankle as I worked to keep up. Had he found out something about me? Discovered the drops of blood in the tunnel? We hurried along the shadowed side of Dark Cottage. "Jace, what are..." But then he suddenly pulled me into a dark arched alcove. He swung around, his arms braced against the wall on either side of me. "What is it?" I asked. Even with darkness concealing us, I saw the dampness that glistened on his brow. A storm gusted through his eyes that I didn't understand. He swallowed and leaned closer.
"I want to kiss you, Kazi,"
he finally said, his voice a whisper.
"And I want you to kiss me back. But this time I don't want it to be because we're only making the best of it. And I don't want a kiss that's for show or has any conditions. I want you to kiss me just because you want to. Because you deeply want to. No one's watching now. You can walk away and I won't say a thing. I promise I won't ever bring it up again."
My breaths stopped up in my chest. He knew I had kissed him willingly today, but there had been conditions. Everything about us was so confused. It wasn't a kiss he was looking for, no matter how true and heartfelt. He was searching for a clarity that couldn't be ours. "Jace, I'm a soldier in the Venden army.
I'm not asking you to be anything else.
In a few weeks, I'll be leaving. When the settlement..."
"The settlement may take more than a few weeks, and I could make the rebuilding last a very long time."
His eyes drilled into mine, searching for something clear, sure, and simply delaying the rebuilding wouldn't give it to him.
"What is this, Kazi? What is this between us?"
The question was still there, but its thrum had grown louder. Coals burned in my stomach. I still had no answer, or maybe I simply didn't want one. "I have to go back, Jace. We only have a short time.
A lot can change in a few weeks, Kazi. Plans can change. There are no guarantees. We could all be dead."
I was intimate with destinies being yanked and pummeled and turned inside out. I knew about being thrown down unexpected paths. But Jace dead? Not him. His presence was too full, too felt, too... I shook my head, rejecting the possibility. It was just his father's unexpected death weighing on him. His shoulders pulled back, and his hands slid from the wall back to his sides, releasing me as if he had received his answer. An angry tick pulsed in his neck. "I have no answers, Jace," I screamed silently. "Not for this." He started to turn away, but I hooked my finger onto his belt, stopping him. He paused, his nostrils flared, waiting and wary. "A kiss will not make all of our differences go away, Jace. It won't."
"I'm not expecting our differences to disappear," he hissed. "I'm just asking you to be honest about this one thing. Would you stop thinking about tomorrow or 1,000 days from now? In this moment, what do you want, damn it?"
I looked at him, unable to speak. My heart hammered wildly. Pivot, steady, blink last. My rules tumbled in a free fall. I felt him pulling away again, and I gave his belt a harsh tug, drawing him to a standstill. My gaze locked onto his, and everything inside me split in different directions. Yes, I want to kiss you, Jace Ballinger. Not for show or to make the best of it. I want to kiss you because I want you. Every part of you. Even the parts that infuriate me beyond telling. Because you've infected me with a poison that I don't want to flush out. Because you're a mad viper twisting around my middle, cutting off my breath, yet I want you more than I want to breathe. Yes, Jace, I want to kiss you just because I do. But the one thing I cannot do is promise you any tomorrows. He stared at me, and I could see every word I had spoken passing through his eyes. He measured them, turned them over, rejected and absorbed them. Finally, his shoulders eased down a fraction of an inch.
Poison.
His mouth pulled in a smirk.
Here, let me infect you some more.
Was it possible to live two lives side by side? To serve two goals that were destined to collide? To weave lies with one hand and unravel them with the other? It was his kindness that had seduced me, and now everything else about him captivated me. I was dancing with fire and hoping not to get burned. We returned to the party, our hands woven together, the music brighter, the food more sumptuous, invisible wish stocks tucked in our pockets.
Be honest about this one thing.
And I was. Even though tables were set, dinner was an ongoing loose affair, meats brought from smoking pits, and more fare set out on long tables as the night wore on. Jace introduced me to nearly everyone there, and more than one guest mentioned their gratitude that the Queen was coming for a visit and tour. The story had already evolved. When we finally had a moment alone, Jace swooped to the side and his lips met mine, easy, and a warm flush spread across my chest.
Do you see who your friend is dancing with?
He asked. I looked over his shoulder. It was Mason, and he didn't look too happy with the situation. It wasn't a dance that required much touching, a simple country jig that was common in many regions. But Sinove was making plenty of missteps, and the Ballinger version had an extra hop or two. Sinove playfully jabbed Mason's ribs as they spun around. He offered a polite, strained smile in return. Acting like the cordial host, probably on Jace's orders. She was radiant, her cheeks glowing with heat, her long locks shimmering in the lantern light like golden marmalade, swinging in rhythm with the zitares and flutes. I wished I could be her sometimes, jumping into every moment fully, her cheer covering the darkness that still lurked deep inside her. I spotted Ren, too. I'd worry more about Aram and Samuel, I answered. I saw them farther away on either side of Ren, one of them trying to maneuver around her zeith every time she turned.
They're not safe with her?
Jace asked. Of course not, but they probably think that's half the fun. Jace smiled and nodded in agreement.
What about us? He asked. Should we join them? We haven't danced yet.
I had already deflected his question twice. A third time would be obvious. I couldn't pretend that I hated to dance. I still remembered hooking my hands around his neck one night in the middle of the Jessup Plain, dancing with him beneath a moonlit sky, the grass waving at our ankles, crickets accompanying the tune he hummed into my ear. I had told him I didn't want the night to end. Now it seemed this night never would. My ankle had grown steadily worse. It was stiff and hot, and I was certain swollen, but I didn't dare peek at it beneath my dress. The medicine had worn off, and the pain was circling around my leg like a spiked iron, every movement taking a bite out of my flesh. Even my thigh burned now. A thin line of sweat beaded at my hairline. When Jace commented on my damp back, I responded that the evening was warm. All right, I answered. Let's join them. Maybe a short dance would be bearable and the subject would be dropped. No hopping, only swaying. We had only taken a few steps toward the brightly lit square strung with lanterns when Jace stopped.
What's wrong?
What do you mean? I asked.
You're limping.
I looked at him and wiped some damp strands of hair from my brow. I forced a smile. It's only these slippers. They don't fit well.
Then take them off. Here, let me help you.
He started to bend down. No, I said, far too loudly. Sweat trickled down my back and pain was squeezing my skull now, and it occurred to me that maybe the dogs were diseased. What if...
Cassie.
Jace's gaze was sober. He knew. Pivot, Cassie. He sees your lies. My foot gave way beneath me, and I stumbled forward, but Jace caught my arm before I hit the ground. He muttered under his breath as he scooped me up, then spotted the bandage. I stared at it in horror. It was bloody. The wounds were seeping.
What the hell?
Jace, please. My face flashed with sickening heat, and Jace called for Tiago and Drake. He carried me down a dark path, away from the guests, ordering Drake to find the healer and Elise. Doors slammed open against walls, and a long hallway bobbed and weaved around me. Jace laid me down on a couch, then found a pillow to prop behind my head.
What happened?
He demanded. He was already unwrapping my ankle. I deliberated taking a chance with the truth, at least some version of it. Chills suddenly overtook me, and then a violent cramp in my stomach doubled me over. Diseased. The dogs had to be diseased. Verlin, Jelaine, and two other women rushed in on Drake's heels, and the room became a swirling chaos of questions. It was the dogs, I answered. I was afraid to tell you. I'm sorry.
Which dogs?
Lower your voice, Jace, Verlin ordered. In the tunnels, I said.
What were you doing in the tunnels?
Jelaine pushed Jace's shoulder. Mother said to stop yelling. This is my fault, Verlin said. I promised her you'd show her the vault this afternoon. It's Jace's fault, Jelaine snapped. I told him she wanted a tour.
Get out, Jelaine, Jace shouted. We have enough in here without you.
I'm not going.
Move aside. Give me some room.
A tall, thin woman elbowed her way in and pulled my dress higher, looking at my leg.
Yes, she's definitely been bitten by the Ashti. Look at the spidering moving up her thigh. A servant is bringing my bag.
Jace's attention jumped from the healer back to me.
The Ashti are stationed well past the vault entrance. What made you go way out there?
I was turned around. There aren't any signs that say vault, Jace, Jelaine interrupted. How would she know? Another spasm gripped my abdomen, and Jace was yelling again, this time at the healer, it seemed. At least, I think he was. I couldn't be sure. His lips moved out of sync with the sound I was hearing, echoing in long, garbled ribbons. I writhed in pain, my fingers digging into my stomach. And then I saw Death squeeze into the crowded room, grinning, waiting in the corner, his bony finger pointing at me. You are next.
No, I cried. Not yet. Not today.
The spasm finally passed, and I saw a hand swipe the air, hitting the side of Jace's head. His mother.
You heard her! Move aside! Give the healer room to work!
The healer lifted a glass to my lips, encouraging me to sip a bitter blue liquid. I gagged as I choked it down.
This will help. There now, keep it down. Another sip, that's right.
She used more of the blue powder to make a paste and applied it to the wounds on my leg. I heard her groan.
This one will have to be stitched. Here's another one.
What were you thinking, girl?
Here, take a sip of this now. It will put you out while I sew these up. The antidote should take effect soon. You'll be fine by morning.
Antidote?
The dogs that bit you are poisonous, Jace said. Without the antidote, you would have been dead by week's end. It's a long and agonizing death.
Poisonous dogs? The thought became lost in a cloud of others, my lids growing heavy. The last thing I saw was a thin glint of steel and a thread being pushed through its eye.
Chapter 29. Jace.
Cassie's head rested against my chest, deep in sleep, as I carried her back to her room. But troubled words tumbled from her lips.
Don't hurt me. I have nothing. Please, don't.
She had mumbled similar words in the drawing room as the healer sewed her up.
Please don't hurt me.
Her words had brought a crashing hush to the room.
Shh,
I whispered as we turned down the last hallway.
No one's going to hurt you.
By the time we reached her room, her expression had relaxed and she was silent, drawn into a deep, oblivious sleep. I still didn't know how she hid the wounds from me for half the night. The bites alone had to be unbearable. But the poison... My mother walked ahead of me and threw open the bedroom door. I carried Cassie inside and laid her on the bed. She didn't stir an eyelash. I looked for a pulse at her neck. It was the only thing that told me she was alive at all.
It's the sleep elixir,
my mother said as if she could read my mind. We both stood there for long, quiet minutes, staring at her. I knew what my mother was thinking, too. Sylvie. Their coloring wasn't the same, but in sleep, Cassie still looked like her in many ways. Small, vulnerable, swallowed up in a sea of rumpled bedclothes. Sylvie was 11 when she died. I was the one who carried her from the ice bath back to her bed. She died in my arms.
Hold my hand, Jace. Promise me you won't let go.
She had cried with the last of her strength.
Don't let them put me in the tomb. I'm afraid.
I had thought it was only delirious words brought on by her fever.
Stop talking like that, sister. You're going to be fine. Promise me, Jace. Don't put me there. Not the tomb. Please promise me.
But I didn't promise her. Her lips were peeling and pale, her eyes sunken, her skin clammy, her voice already a ghost, all signs that she was leaving this world. But I had refused to see. I wouldn't accept that a Ballinger could die. Especially not Sylvie.
Go to sleep, sister. Sleep. You'll be fine in the morning.
She had relaxed in my arms then. I thought she was sleeping. My mother had stepped out of the room for only a few minutes to check on my brothers and sister who were sick too. When she came back, Sylvie was dead in my arms. My mother wiped Cassie's brow with a cloth.
You were harsh with her, she said.
I was only trying to get answers.
I know.
She pulled a stool closer to the bed.
And you were frightened?
I'll sit with her.
Go find your answers.
The air was dank, as it always was here, as if the chilly breaths of the dead still hung here in the darkness, unable to escape. The tunnels were both sanctuary and prison, stuffy like the tombs that Sylvie had begged me to save her from. I listened to the silence, the solitary sound of my boots scuffling on the cobbles, and I imagined Cassie slipping through here undetected.
The tunnel was deserted now, except for guards at the entrance. But today, when she had passed, there had to have been dozens of workers passing through. And none had stopped her? Still, I looked at the wagons parked along the perimeter, the pallets, the shadows, all providing places to hide if you were careful, and it was only a spare number of paces from the workyard to the T where another set of tunnel systems branched off the main one. I stopped at the faded crest that marked the entrance, barely illuminated with lantern light. The only thing that indicated the vault was down this way.
You were harsh with her.
I remembered shouting, feeling out of control. One minute I had been thinking about dancing, and the next I was unwrapping a bloody cloth from her leg as she doubled over in pain. Right beneath my nose, something was going on, and I hadn't seen it. I was afraid to tell you. Had I refused to see it? I thought about her damp back. I had noticed the beaded line of sweat on her brow, too. It's the warm night. It wasn't that warm, and there was a breeze, but I had accepted her explanation and let myself be distracted by other details. I went past the entrance to the vault and walked to the end where she had gone, so much farther out of the way. I turned the final corner and barked a command to dogs I couldn't see. They came out of their alcoves to greet me, moaning and cooing, with their hind ends wagging, hoping for a scratch behind their ears. The Ashti looked just like any other dogs, though closer to the size of a timber wolf, and sly. They could have killed her. They had killed before. Her reflexes had to be fast to escape them. The dogs kept intruders away, but most would-be trespassers were far more terrified of dying from their poisonous bite than from being torn apart. It was an unpleasant way to die, and not many had the antidote. It came from the far north, where the dogs were from. Kabaki traders had gifted them to us generations ago after we gave them refuge during a late winter storm. The milksap antidote didn't grow here, and the Kabaki still brought us a supply once a year when they made their pilgrimage to the south. I bent down, holding the torch closer to the floor. A stain had been smeared. She had taken the time to clean up the blood, trying to cover her tracks.
Why?
Mason's words stung me over and over again, like a wasp that wouldn't die.
She can't be trusted.
I stepped up to the door and checked the lock. It was secure and appeared to be undisturbed. I turned and scratched each dog behind the ear, and they whined their appreciation. It was true. The vault wasn't marked. You had to know where to turn. But what made her pass up two other passages and come all the way out here? Only curiosity? I had told her about the vault in the first few days we were together. She'd been fascinated by it. The idea of a shelter carved into a granite mountain and the history and stories that began there. Even though I knew she didn't believe it all, I'd been happy she had taken a genuine interest. It wasn't surprising that she wanted to visit the source of my claims, and I should have known by now that Cassie didn't wait for permission for anything.
Be sure to save time for the tour, Jace. Cassie wants to see the vault.
Jelaine had tried to say it offhandedly as she left for the arena this afternoon, but her tone had been thick with pride. Cassie was Venden, an outsider, and she wanted to see the vault. It was an acknowledgement that for us was a sign of respect. And for Jelaine, I guessed, it brought Cassie deeper into our inner circle. The vault was our beginnings, where our schooling began, the source of much of our history. Without the vault, none of us would be here. It was nothing but a dusty, mostly abandoned relic now. Nash and Lydia still did some transcribing there, as we all had once done, but I hadn't been inside in months. In spite of the broken, decayed furnishings, it was still remarkable in many ways. The natural filtration of the mountain still providing fresh air and water. But beyond that, it was uninhabitable, partly by design. It was meant to be remembered as it once was.
It's Jace's fault.
I returned to the main house. Servants were still clearing the gardens after the party, all the guests now gone or retired to Greycastle. Ren and Zenove had all but ripped Cassie from my arms when they burst into the drawing room and saw her,
There was no trust there, and they assumed the worst until they saw the healer and Kazi's stitched wounds. Then an expression of guilt washed over them. They knew she had been bitten, but they too had said